Guys, we're gonna be serious today. We're gonna have a very serious discussion, and we're gonna appreciate some women today because it's Women's Appreciation Month. We should be appreciated every day. It shouldn't even just be monthly, but every day we should be appreciated. And we do a lot, and I feel like in a lot of ways we don't appreciate things, especially when it comes to women and what they do and how they function. And I tell people a lot that, you know, we do a lot of amazing things. So before I sit here and go into that, I'm gonna take a moment, I'm gonna breathe, let me get myself zen, you know, get away from the craziness of my day, because honestly, guys, like, with the new schedule, I haven't really taken the time to find a good breaking point, because my schedule has been kind of straight from work, drive, then come here and come straight into a podcast. And I love my podcast. I look forward to my podcast, but then that drive isn't enough time to de-escalate from, you know, work and stress from work. So taking this moment, but I forgive you guys, and for if you guys are sticking through it, I appreciate you guys either way. But let's get on with it. Hello, hi guys, what's good? I'm here. Hello, we're good. All right. First and foremost, many blessings, great many blessings, good vibes, healing vibes from your friendly neighborhood witch. Welcome to Reiku's Weekend Detox. We are here again to share nothing but positive good vibes, talk about lovely helpful things that you guys may have not known. Again, remember, my self-help journey is not the same that's going to be for you guys. I just want to make sure you guys have the tools and know that the resources out there are available for you guys, and also to educate you guys on different things that you guys may not be aware of. Especially when it comes to the mental health community, I'm constantly growing, constantly evolving. It's not a rocket science. It's not like where, you know, we instantly know the cure-all, end-all solution to it. So, unfortunately, it's a lot to do with, you know, figuring out what's going to be the best things. I'm sorry, my cat is acting a spastic mess over here. What are you doing? You do this every podcast. You don't do this during any other time. The moment you know a camera's rolling, you want to act up. Okay. But I do have a treat for you guys. Anybody who's going to be here, going to be sticking it out, I do have a lovely poem that I'm going to share with you guys. And I'm going to kind of go from there. For those who are not aware, I do write poetry. I'm not great at my poetry. Other people will beg to differ. But I can tell you straight up, I'm not great. Probably will never be great. I appreciate it, though. All day, every day, no problems. But I have been mentally not where I needed to be for the last week. I've been down. As you guys know, when I told you last podcast, I've been pretty depressed. And like I said, we're not going to be great all the time. We're not going to be 100% all the time. And one thing that I told people is that it's about finding balance. You can't just jump up one day and expect everything to work out amazing. Like, a lot of people look at me as an inspirational woman, a person to look up to because of everything I've gone through, the trials and tribulations I've gone through, and taking control over my mental health, my spiritual health, and everything else like that as a milestone for, you know, growth and development for other people. And I mean, I don't think of myself as somebody to look up to. I just look at myself as a person that I've witnessed other people's character flaws and how a situation can be. I evaluate a situation and then, like, kind of try to avoid falling to the same habits of other people before me.
So it's just like I look at those habits, the situational, environmental habits and everything, and just try to avoid succumbing to a stigma or a stereotype of a person who was in an abusive household, or a person who witnessed a parent who was in an abusive household, and everything else like that. And I took matters in my own hand when it came to my own mental health, because it just seemed like everybody kept giving me guidance that was for the African American communities, where we don't talk about certain things. Certain things are just taboo. We don't talk about mental health. We don't talk about, you know, that really pervy cousin or really pervy uncle who, you know, sit here and eyeball, you know, that young niece or nephew and molesting and all that other stuff. Like, we, and I'm sorry, trigger warning for those who knows this, but we don't talk about certain things in the African American communities. And I'm sorry, I'm tongue tied, guys. I'm still trying to process my thought process from work, but we don't talk about those things. We don't talk about mental health in the Black community. And that's why I started my podcast. And a lot of people look at me as a, oh my God, you're talking about this taboo subject that nobody else wants to talk about. You're talking about taboo things that most millennials don't want to talk. Oh my God, you're a millennial trying to break millennial stigmas in the Black mental health community. And it's like, there's other people out there. Like, I feel like there's other people you can look to, like, you know, Strong Friends podcast. Like, they are phenomenal. Like, this is another podcaster who is based in Florida, and she understands. She talks about, you know, being Baker Act and trying to let people know that being a strong friend is still technically a character flaw in people who have mental health issues. And I mean, like, there's a lot of women out there who are trying to break these stigmas, who are trying to break that mold. So looking at me as a woman and appreciating myself, and I do, and I it took me years. My best friend, like Nikki, will tell you, I am so humble. No matter what, I am super, super humble. Like, I do not feel like I deserve praise for something other people have been doing as well. But at the same time, I have to take moments and realize that if it wasn't for people like me and other people out there in the world trying to make a change, we wouldn't have a month dedicated to remembering or honoring women who are trying to make a change. So I want to use me as a starting point as of what this episode is going to be about. We're going to look at other women, especially African American women, who have made some kind of change in the medical health field when it comes down to it. I want to be like them. That's why I'm going and I'm getting my degree in in psychology, so I can help other people get there and not just be a strong friend and be able to, because a lot of people don't understand, even therapists need therapy. They do. But I want to be able to honestly say, I have the degree, I have the means, I have the tools, even if the tools are readily there in the internet for us to be able to do the things that we need to do to get the mental health that we need, the health that we need, and be able to try to break these stigmas and these stereotypes and find that, you know, first, like, groundbreaking floor to, like, you know, hit a pickaxe into to change some stuff. Like, I appreciate those who have been there, who've actually listened. And like I said, I have a treat for you guys at the end if you guys stick it out. But there's a lot of people who are going through their own journeys and a lot of people who are trying to change their own ways. And like I've always told you guys, for those who are using me as a, oh my God, she's doing something, she's my idol, I'm not perfect. By no means am I perfect. I am still suffering with PTSD. I'm still suffering with depression and anxiety. But I'm at that point with my depression and anxiety where I don't want to be on medication anymore because my medication is not really doing what it needs to do. So I'm winging myself off and finding joys in life naturally, finding a natural high. I've been on it for so long, and I've found ways to make myself happy without being on it, and just trying to make change. So again, I'm starting with me as a little grain of sand in this beach of like phenomenal women who have made a change, because it's not just me. We as a power strong like group, we are so many and so few that it's like, for people that do follow me, they listen to me, they listen to my story, listen to what I'm trying to accomplish, what I'm trying to promote, body positivity, as well as, you know, trying to help promote when it comes down to everything else. I want people to understand, like, we are out there. There's a lot more of us out there than just me or a few others. Like I said, there's my photographer, Jasmine Denise, and I know you guys are get super tired of me hyping her up, but y'all don't understand what this woman has gone through. If you heard her story, you will understand why I hype her up so much. She has gone through so much. Even when my friend Kat, she gone through a lot. And she has a lot of anxiety. She has a lot of other things. I decided to take charge of my mental health because of these women. Not just because of me wanting to actually be a true, strong friend. Because even strong friends need help. I was drowning in other people's drama, trying to maintain the strong friend physique when I was still suffering myself. Like, I put my battles that I was battling since I was a kid to the side to help other people, and it wasn't really good for me. So, people like Jasmine and Denise, if you ever get an opportunity or the joy of hanging around my photographer or catching one of her stories or catching her rants or following her on Facebook and she's actually telling her story, listen. A woman, any woman, any woman in any capacity, especially a black woman, who's willing to be vulnerable to the public when it comes to mental health, to trauma, to bad relationships, and show that, yes, I may come off as a strong woman, but this is why I'm strong, and show that vulnerability, cry about it on social media, talk about it on social media to help other women who may be going through the same thing, if not similar things, to make them better and to make a change in our society, in our world. Those are the women who have healed a lot more and gone through a lot more. And the women who I'm going to discuss today, some of the women I'm going to talk about today, is going to be some of the women who are making, who have made a tremendous change in the mental health society. And then I'm going to tell you guys a little bit background again. So again, I'm trying to give you guys a cliff note on why I'm the way that I am. And despite everything, why I'm not bitter, why I'm not angry, why I'm not, you know, a person with a whole bunch of baggage and showing the baggage and coming off as the angry black woman in my life, and why I'm the way that I am. I tell you guys this all the time, but I'm going to keep telling you guys until it stick, so you guys will understand where I came from and why I am and who I am and why I'm doing what I'm doing today. So it's like, I want to make sure that you guys know. So here are some black women heroes in the health community that you guys may not have known. And this is talking about in medicine. Now, mind you, before I go into the details of that, let me remind you why I want to focus on black women. I'm not going to segregate white women in this in any way, shape, or form. But I want to focus on black women for this episode. Next episode, I will focus a little bit more on white women and other women out there. But in past history, black women have been subjected to testing. And even to some cases, they have still been suggested or subjected to testing for testing purposes in both reproductive medicine and mental health, physical health, and men too. So for me as a Black woman, I'm as much as I do claim my other nationalities, because I'm not 100% African American, I focus on my Black pride because of fact of being how much we've gone through. And even then, with the little bit of Irish I have in my bloodline, Irish people have been enslaved. So a lot of people keep forgetting that Irish people were enslaved as well. So it's not just me saying, oh, you know, Black is superior, or this, that, and the other. We've all in some way, shape, or form have gone through something. But I'm focusing on this episode when it comes to Black medicine because of I to being, we have been test subjects in history. There's proven history that we are been test subject, especially African-American women. We were, honestly, the reason why pap smears were even explored or even discovered was a white doctor performing experiments on a Black African-American slave. And that's how, you know, pap smears came into fruition. So that's why I want to focus a little bit on this when it comes to this month of mental health. I want to talk about Black doctors who went out of their way, because even in some studies, there was at one point of time in certain schools, like, you know, Princeton and a few other schools, where they used the Black students as test subjects even then, even if they were going in for the same degree as the white kids. And I'm sorry for the trigger warning. I'm always going to be straight up and honest with you guys. There's multiple resources out there. I could cliff note and, you know, give you the resources, but what fun would that be? I had to do my research. I want y'all to do y'all's too. If you really are interested on the subject, there's plenty of resources out there. But when most people see here and they talk about medical health, they always talk about white doctors. So they don't ever really talk too much about the Black doctors out there that's made a lot of differences and impact out there, especially when it comes to medicine. So for a long time, women and people of color were not really welcome there. But then when they started coming in, they found ways of degrading them and not paying them the same equal amount. We're still at this point, we're still dealing with a lot of that, where we can have a neurosurgeon or even a brain doctor who may be of African American or color descent and still get paid less than a white American doctor. There is major contributors in great strides that come into the medical field, especially for those who want to go into the medical field. I know that the journey I chose when it comes to being a psychiatrist is not going to be an easy one. It's not. It's going to be a very strenuous, there's going to be days I'm going to be like, I am tired. I don't want to do this no more. I want to quit. But luckily, I have a very good support group and a manager who's like, nah, man, you're gonna dish this out. There was multiple times this week I wanted to quit. Like, I was like, why did I subject myself to this? I'm like 30 years old. Why did I decide to go back to school now? And then I was like, well, because I took years off for marriage, you know? Like, I was married and had to deal with the things involving my marriage. So that's why I took time. So when it comes down to, there's literally a whole generation of Black healthcare workers out there that I feel like a lot of people don't know, they don't recognize, they don't get enough recognition, they probably, most people don't even know existed or exist if they're still alive. So one person that fascinated me a little bit, and it was like the main one I kept coming across when I was doing my research, was Dr. Joycelyn Elders. She, one of the most powerful voices when it came to public health over several years. She actually was around, she started off in the military, so she's a great, great vet. So she started off, right after college and stuff, joined the military. And in 1956, she went to medical school, where she was basically required to eat in a separate dining room from the rest of her classmates. She had to basically be away from the rest of her classmates. She was placed in a room with the cleaning staff to eat. And Miss Elders was a monumental piece when it came down to the mental health and the public health. She was basically the chief resident at the University of Arkansas when she oversaw all the white, all male residents and interns. She fought very, very hard. And around that time, that was about 1961 when all that started going into fruition. Around 1978, Elders became the first person in the state of Arkansas to become the board certified in pediatric endocrinology. Basically, you know, she was dealing with, you know, children. So if you know what that means, I don't feel like I need to explain dealing with pediatrics is children. So she dealt with that. And then she continued to construct research and working in clinical practices in the area through 1980s. Now, during Bill Clinton's Bill Clinton appointed her the head of the Arkansas Department of Health in 1987, where she basically explained sex ed and conversation on a national level as well when it came to sex ed and the importance of sex ed. She basically overseen the Department of Health between 1987 into 1992, which for those who didn't know, I was born in 91. So the next year is when she was no longer over the Department of Education. She basically, during that time, she was in her seat overseeing the Department of Health during those years. She brought issues, like public issues, to the forefront. Basically doubling childhood immunizations. So, you know, people who needed the flu shots, tetanus shots, everything else like that. She brought forth the importance of that for your children because she cared about kids, white, black, everything in between. At that time, she wanted children to strive because she knew children were important and their health was important to get it right for when they were adults. And she fought for that. She also expanding the state's prenatal care program, which a lot of the times at that time in that particular era, prenatal did not continue after a certain amount of months into pregnancy. Prenatal basically was like, all right, 3 months in, you're good, cool, you made it through the first trimester. No, she was basically saying you need prenatal care all the way up to the point of X amount of years into the child's already existence and being here and whining and crying, and that you still need that care even after a child is in this world. She brought that to the forefront because we weren't really fully educated. A lot of people don't understand that when it came to prenatal care and the human body and children and the development of it, was so far in between, like, educational purposes. Like, people don't understand that we actually still don't have it down to a science when it comes down to prenatal care, when it comes down to the women body, reproductive organs. Like, it's been less than 10 years. You guys would think that we have everything figured out, but we don't. But she made it important to deal with that. And she also increased home care options for the clinically and the terminally ill. So she thought about you from the time that you were a glimmer in your parents' eyes to the point that you were at your last point of life and how important certain things were and how we needed to bring it to a forefront. She was one of the few advocates who were talking about how important sex ed was for school and needed to be taught in school and being educated for sex ed. Now, mind you, this is a Black African-American woman telling people that we need to educate our youth in school. And she did that. She fought. She fought hard. Now, mind you, that's not where she stopped. She didn't stop at 1992. She kept going. 1993, Clinton basically named her the U.S. Surgeon General. So that's the reason why in that time she got a promotion. She kept going. She's like, I'm going to keep doing it. Here's where it got tricky. 15 months into her getting that promotion, she got forced to resign. They didn't fire her. They basically forced her out of it. They were like, nah, bruh. We don't like that you had this much power. They won't admit that's the reason. They basically said that she has some some unconventional views on contraceptions. And she felt like she wanted to distribute condoms at sex eds in high school and teaching as masturbation as a legit way of expressing human sexuality versus having sex. Of course the Christians ain't gonna have they're gonna have a huge problem with that. Like, no, you're not going to teach my child to masturbate, because we were still in that time where, you know, masturbation could cause you to go blind and get fur on your hand and stuff like that. Like, literally, that's why she got forced to resign, because the Christians and the people in the Bible Belt didn't appreciate her views on telling the kids, hey, I'm going to pass out condoms to keep you from basically... We can't keep you from having sex. It's not like we can put a ball and chain on you or put a chastity belt on you like in the old days. We're going to give you condoms instead so you can practice safe sex. We're going to educate you about safe sex and the flaws of that goes on it. And we're also going to sit here and express that masturbation is healthy for you. Now, if you guys, sidebar on that, most people know, if you guys ever talk to Britt, which is one of my mods, she will tell you her first day of meeting me is, or her first interaction of meeting me is when I was in high school and I literally was with a group of seniors and I was a freshman because people didn't believe me. I was legitimately a freshman, but I always hung out with older people. I told them that masturbation is healthy for you. It relieves XYZ. I was a little too mature for my age as a freshman. I wasn't having sex, but I was very mature for my age. And I tell people, like, it is what it is. So I honestly don't disagree with Miss Elders. Like, Dr. Elders, no, she get all my respect. Because honestly, at the end of the day, I was telling people masturbation is healthier for you than having sex in high school. I was not lying. I'm legit. I was telling them the pros of having, protective sex, because I did go through sex ed with my mom. My mom decided to teach me about sex in her own way by having me watch this old school movie called Kids. And if you've ever had the joy of watching the movie called Kids, do it. It is a very good educational piece. It is a very traumatic experience of these guys who are taking these girls' virginities and then passing AIDS around to each other. It's not like an educational movie. It's a legit movie that they made about kids having sex and older boys taking advantages of younger girls who are like 14, 13 years old and having, you know, unprotected sex with them and passing AIDS around. I don't suggest, if you've never seen it, to not watch it with... I don't suggest you watching it with your kids. Legit. If your child says, oh, I'm gonna go watch this movie called Kids, you might want to kind of, like, look into it. Because, honestly, that movie scared the crap out of me. So I tend to not talk too much about it. But if you've ever want a movie to have a traumatic experience, that would be the movie to watch, because it would definitely teach you some sex educational stuff and tell you that masturbation is a lot better than having sex and going out and having parties. Honestly, I think that was the reason why I was a weird kid in high school, where I didn't want to go out and have parties, because I just instantly thought that everybody was doing the same thing that the kids were in this movie was. That's the reason why my mom was like, well, if you're going to have to do it, you're going to explore and you're going to do this and this, you might as well masturbate. But I mean, my mom literally had the same idea as Miss Elders, Dr. Elders. Now, another person I want to go ahead and talk about, because a lot of people don't understand, is Dr. Donna Christensen. And yes, that is Donna Kristen Christensen. She is another doctor that a lot of people don't ever talk about. She was elected as the delegate for the U.S. Virgin Islands. So for those who are from the islands, I'm going to be talking about somebody there. In 1996, she was the first female medical doctor to serve in Congress, but was far from her first achievement. She was one of the first, let me say this again, first female medical doctor to serve in Congress. But again, this was not her first achievement. She basically started working in emergency rooms in the Virgin Islands and working her way up. Again, and this was like in 1975, so this was around like the 1970s, so around the time that my parents were like kids, because my mom and my dad was born in 1970, so this is like 5 years into there. So she was hustling. She was bona fide, like, I'm going to be running around just like all these other doctors in the emergency room. And then she got into community organization, talking to her parents and learning about their social and political concerns. She took her own practice and began working as a health ambassador and administrator to raise the position, get basically raised to the position of health of the Virgin Islands. So she basically was like, hey, I'm over the Virgin Islands, I'm gonna go ahead and do this. And she held a lot of government-like positions between the time she was working in the emergency room up until the time that she got elected for Congress in 1996. So she was doing so much to build. She was listening to her patients, listening to their concerns, listening to her wants, listening to her needs in order to become a voice of reason for the health community from the Virgin Islands on up. And she was stated, quoted in 2013, in my practice, you will always find that there is a lot of social and other issues that impact the health of your patients. And she said it in an interview from the University of Notre Dame Observer. Many times people will come in and just talk about whatever problems they're having. So I kind of look at it as a bring my office work from a local level to a larger national level. Now, during that time that she was in Congress, she was there for 15 years. She continued to work to end the healthcare and health insurance disparities for minority communities and women and fight against the right of AIDS and AIDS threat. So she worked hard to basically listen to the community's concerns when it came to their health. She saw the the discrepancies. She saw the issues that was in the health insurance when it came to what was issued to minorities. And she was like, this is unjust, especially when you're a person who is in the healthcare field. You can't just be a doctor or be a nurse and think that you can't listen to your patients. I understand that they're there for a paycheck, but in order to actually have or be in that field, you got to have that bedside manner. You got to be willing or wanting to be listened to, or to have people there and want to actually end their suffering. Because if not, then you'll be like Dr. Death, and you don't want to be like Dr. Death. These women looked at what was going on and seeing a issue, and they wanted to make a change to that issue. They were trying to be revolutionary. They were trying to make a change. Like, women like this is those those people that we need to look at and focus on and understand that they came from a background where it was in the 60s and 70s where we just still were getting tested on, like we were lab rats and being tested and seeing that we were not getting the same equal and honest and fair treatment in the hospitals as our, you know, our white counterparts or our 1% counterparts. And they're saying, oh, I see that there's a wrong, there's an injustice, there's a way we can be able to find it, and there's a solution. Because guess what? People fail to realize that medical practice is still just that. Medical practice, they're practicing medicine. They're going to continue practicing. So a lot of people's like, well, you know, they did all kinds of testing, XYZ. It's because medical science is always going to change. Science is always evolving, and we're, as humans, we're going to be evolving. And so it's the diseases that we're going to have to fight and the issues that we're going to have to fight. But more or less that we have to kind of take the moments and look at the things that we go through. Now, in order for us to even talk about anything else, there's one last person I really want to talk about before I drift into a backstory for you guys, and kind of go from there. Before I talk about this lady, because she's a little bit further back than the other ones. The last two were more recent. Health in its own self is a very important thing to look at. Mental, physical, spiritual, all of its health. And when I tell you guys, as a person who has my own health issues I battle, and as a person who recognize I have trauma, that I have PTSD, that I have a certain attachment style, and I am, you know, protecting my energy by pushing people away or doing stuff. These women did the same thing. They noticed a trend, or they noticed things. As women, we notice a lot of things. Men notice things too, but women, we're a little bit more, a little observant. We pay attention and we don't bite our tongues a lot. And I get that a lot of people don't understand that doctors are going to continue practicing medicine, but unfortunately, there are necessary evils. They're here for a reason. They have to be here for a reason. So with the last two most recent women, let's talk about Mary Mahoney. Now, Miss Mary, she was the first black professional nurse in America. She was known for her contributing for both local and national health organizations. She graduated from New England Hospital for Women and Children, training school for nurses in 1879. Let me get my years correct. At the age of 37. So she started being a nurse late in years. She was one of only three people out of 42 to complete the difficult 16-month course. Because of the difficulty she faced finding a hospital job as a result of her race, she spent most of her, basically her next three decades working as a private nurse under the table. So she really wasn't on the books, per se, as a nurse. She was in the office, but in the back. She was doing all the stuff in the background. Nobody really was giving her any recognition. And it was hard. Again, that's 1879. If the women in 1993 to 2013 was still having some issues, you obviously know if I was talking about 1879, we were definitely going to have some issues there. She spent most of her time, like I said, as a private nurse. She was renowned for her compassion, her patient care. You would think that she was like a mother when it came down to the people. She became the director of the Howard Orphan Asylum for Black Children in Long Island, New York. For those who aren't aware, so people who are New Yorkers probably know about her or heard about her. Following more than 40 years working as a nurse, she dedicated much of her time campaigning for women's equality, including being one of the first women to register to vote in Boston in 1920. And in 1993, she was inducted into the National Hall of Fame for Women in New York for her civil rights and medicine. There is a lot of people that do not understand how hard it is to this day as a black woman in America. We, especially those in the medical field, they don't get as much recognition, they don't get as much praise, they don't get as much love, affection, all that other stuff. It's hard. It's very, very hard. So these are women who've done so much more when it comes to the health community. So for when I get people who tell me, like, hey, I'm thankful that you told us your story, and I love to hear your story, and that you're willing to share your story. You made such an impact on my life and my mental health, and made me believe that I can be able to overcome it, and you creating a safe space and good vibes and always being there and this, that, and the other. It's literally pennies compared to these gems, to these women who went so far and beyond to make a change as African-American women, to make a change in our world. And like I said, it's not just African-American women. There's a lot of women out there in this world who has made monumental changes when it comes to mental health, physical health, spiritual health. Not these women who are just like, oh, let me give you a quick get help, quick scheme, and, you know, quick health. Oh, you don't need to do medicine and stuff. You don't need to go see a doctor. Don't worry, I got this herbal, non-treated remedy that has no backing for you guys out there. But there is a lot of women out there who are in the medical field, or advocates, or teachers in the, like, that's out there that can do so much. And for people who come to me, I appreciate every single one of y'all who tell me, thank you so much for telling your story. Thank you so much for trying to be an educator when it comes to these things. I didn't know that these things were out there, these resources, these things. There is a lot more women out there who has done so much more than me. And from the bottom of my heart, my soul, I'm going to tell you guys, thank you. I appreciate your good words, your kind words, everything. But let me tell you where I got this from. Now, you guys have heard my dramatic story, but let me tell you about the women in my life who made me who I am. Minus the trauma. I have mothers, not one, multiple mother figures in my life. And these women, they have been the most monumental women I've ever met in my life. And I feel like they don't get enough praise. I have friends who are strong powerhouses that they are forces to be reckoned with, and they've gone through so much. They are literally goddesses to me, and why I praise these women so much, because there's so many strong women out there who have gone through and fought just as many demons, if not more demons than I have, and they are still standing strong even when they have fell down. I daily keep getting kicked down, and I'm still getting the fuck up, and so are they. First person I want to talk about is my mama. No, not the one that y'all hear the stories about. I love my mama to death. I love both my mothers, my biological mother and then the woman who raised me. The woman who raised me, my sister's mother, the most beautiful queen in the world. Her birthday is next Tuesday. She took a mantle to raise me as if I was her own child. And I wasn't. Every day She still gets up, deals with my dad, love him to death. He's gotten a lot better. I have to give it to him. He's definitely gotten a lot better. My dad has gotten a little bit more aware of mental health, spiritual energy, because, you know, his daughter is a me. He's changed a lot of his habits. He's not as old-fashioned. He's a little bit more open and receptive. But my mama, every day, she's taking care of me, my brother. She's there for her daughter. She's there for her other son, my brother. She's there for my dad, her dad. She bears so much on her shoulders. Beautiful, strong woman. Some days, I be sitting here and I remember, what was it, Thanksgiving or Christmas, that we cornered her in a corner and told her to sit her behind down. Thanksgiving. This woman does not know when to sit down. Told her to sit down, let her daughters work. We got it. This is what we're here for. No, mama. This is what I mean about we are conditioned as African-American women to not show weakness. So when our kids come to us and as an empath and as a person who's very observant, I unfortunately got that from both my parents and, you know, my traumatic experience. I pay attention. I'm very alert to what's going on and what's around and what's going on at that moment in that presence. I told her to sit down. I was like, if you don't go sit down, I'm going to put you down. Like, that's it. Like, I told my parent. I told her she needed to go sit down because she was tired. I could tell she was tired. She was overwhelmed. She's taking care of her dad and everybody else, but she's not taking care of herself. Love her to death. Very strong woman, but she's the pure definition of a strong friend and not in a healthy way where, you know, she's taking time and actually taking care of herself. She's so busy taking care of other people. She's not taking care of herself. And there's some days I really hope that she, you know, sit down and listen to my podcast and understand the reason why I told her to sit down. Because one thing that she always tells me, unfortunately, and I don't think she lives by it, is I tell her to, and I put it back in her face, is what good are you to anyone if you're not taking care of yourself? Like, what good can you do for someone else who needs you if you're not taking care of yourself? So, there's my mama. And my biological mother. My mom was the same way. Now, I know you guys heard the story of, you know, her being in an abusive relationship. And I've told you guys, like, honestly, at the end of the day, we had our faults. We had our issues. And honestly, at the end of the day, and I'm going to tell you why I forgave and I had to relook at it at a different light. I never really blamed my mom. I blamed it for a moment, but then I had to think as I got older. The reason she did what she did was because of fear. She did it out of fear of her life. And if something happened to her, what would happen to her kids? Because at that time when I left, it wasn't just me and my brother and my mom. It was me, my brother, and then when I left, it was my brother and my other brother, because she was pregnant at the time when I left. So she did everything she did out of fear. It wasn't because my mom was abusive. It was because she was being abused and she was fearing that if she didn't do or comply, she could lose a life. And now she's a strong woman. Don't get me wrong, she still, you know, has her weak moments, but she's starting to get better. And honestly, as I look at it, the more I talk to her, she's starting to learn from me. Just like my mom, my stepmom, and my dad is learning from me. And I mean, to this day, it surprised me that people learn from me, especially older people. Another person that I want to give a lot of thanks to is my mama bat, Shell. She is the owner of Ravens and Rockers. And she is like my mama bat. I literally say, if I ever say my mama bat, that's who I'm talking about. She's another very strong woman, very carefree. And instantly, the moment she walks into a room, she just lights up a room. And she's very hypersensitive emotionally and spiritually. and she can tell when somebody's having bad energy or when they're, you know, low or down, even if they're far. And she'll tell me straight up, like, your frequency's low. And I'm like, I'm states away. How do you know this? And she's just very, very, very intuitive when it comes to those things. And I love her to death. And her birthday just recently passed. So I'm not trying to, like, tell these women, like, praise these women to make them sad. Like, I'm praising these women because they deserve their praise. Like I feel like they don't get enough recognition. Now, even further into my generation, like, from my parents, let's go a little higher up on why I'm who I am today. My grandmother, Barbara, and my grandmother, Bibi, and my great aunt. My great aunt just passed. She was like a grandmother to me. My grandma, Barbara, passed when I was too young to remember, so her sister took over the mantle, and I just lost her. And I'm sorry if I get emotional and start crying, because she was, if anybody asked, that was my grandmother. Like, that was just it. Like, that's how I feel about this woman. But I knew she was my great aunt, but she was grandma to me. This woman has multiple times pulled me to the side during family reunions when I would be there and just talk to me. She told, when I pulled her over to the side and told her recently before she passed, I was like, Auntie, I got an OF. She's like, what is an OF? I was like, I'm modeling. Well, I knew you were modeling, baby, but what do you mean? Why do you gotta tell me you modeling? And I told her what kind of modeling I was doing, and I was writing poems. She's like, well, go ahead, baby. You know, you and my shady baby and stuff. Y'all both beautiful babies, so I know y'all can go ahead and do it. And I know you killing it in the modeling game. As long as you ain't hurt nobody and you happy, that's all that matters. And with her giving me the seal of approval to do the explicit content modeling I'm doing, I was like, Auntie is proud of me. That's all that matters. She was the sweetest lady. Like, even when me and my mom was not seeing eye to eye, she would always ask me about my mama. And when I told her what was going on, it broke her heart. But at the same time, she told me not to close my mama out and that my mama did everything she did for a reason. And that's when I started looking at it in a different perspective. But when I tell you this woman was the most caring, charismatic person, she has made me who I am today. And it's open and honest. And it's I'm going to go say my goodbyes to her physical being, you know, well, her physical form on Tuesday. And, but when I tell you she lives on in me and her actual grandkids and great grandkids, this woman was phenomenal. And she knew I was trying to change my mental health and change how society looked at mental health. And when I told her the things I wanted to do, she told me how proud she was. And she's like, keep making me proud. This woman was the sweetest woman in the world. And she was the reason I didn't hold any hate in my heart. Because she told me, don't walk around holding hate in your heart. That's heavier than holding love in your heart. You will never have room for love if you have nothing but hate. How do you expect somebody to love you if all you do is hate? So I could have literally been a very hateful person. But when I tell you this woman basically told me not to be a hateful person, and my heart and my soul knew I shouldn't be a hateful person. Honestly, everything she told me is the same thing everybody else who has been a monumental impact in my life, my growth, my development, was because of her. Everybody has repeated the same thing. If you hear the same thing from multiple people, from different people who have no intertwine with each other, then obviously you need to go ahead and do it. But she was literally, out of all three of those women, my grandmother, both my mom and my dad's side, and then my great aunt, literally is the reason that I am the way I am today. And she was a combination of both all three of them. Like, she had the goofiness and that loving compassion and will always be there and just loving. And it warms my heart knowing that all of them are watching over me and they are, you know, my guardians to this day, and they live through me and the rest of our family. And it's like, it's sad, yes, but it brings a warmth to my heart knowing that their spirits are going to continue living on and their knowledge is going to continue living on through us. And as long as we honor their memory and we continue living through their memory and wanting and living by what they told us and guided us, we're going to continue being great. Like, my grandmother would not want me to be a hateful person, but she also wouldn't want me to fuck around with people who wasn't good for me. She told me straight up, no, we are not going to do that. You are not going to end up being that type of person. You want to love these people unconditionally and compassionately, family or not, or love them from afar, even if you don't fuck with them. And that's just it. You are not going to sit here and let them have that kind of control on you. I will not evil talk or bad mouth anybody I don't fuck with. I ain't going to continue giving them that energy because my grandmother's told me growing up to never go on. When I got bullied, the only conversation I remember other than me getting my ass handed to me because I was a bad child. I got in some trouble for lighting up leaves. I rolled up leaves because my grandmother was an avid smoker. So was my dad. So was my mom. And my cousin got caught smoking cigarettes. Well, he was smoking cigarettes. And I was trying to be under him and do the same thing as him. So instead of that, I sat here and rolled up leaves and was smoking them in front of the church in front of my grandmother's house. My grandmother found out, whooped my ass, and then had a conversation with me about it. I was a bad child. I ain't gonna lie. But my grandmother had a conversation with me when I got bullied with the kids down the road. I used to come up every summer or every winter, be at my grandmother's house, and I don't talk like I'm from the Midwest. I don't. So I was told, oh, you're a white girl. Blah, blah, blah. No. It's because I had proper education. I spoke proper. I didn't, you know, speak slang. My cousin used to be like, I could pick on her, but y'all can't pick on her. And that's my A1 since day one. But my grandmother had a conversation with me. She was like, you don't need to forgive them in their face. You need to forgive them for you. And then you don't, once you done messing with them, because they're going to be irrelevant. And she told me straight up, what they eat don't make you shit. And that's something my dad tells me to this day. Whatever they eat don't make you shit. So if you sit here and focus too much energy on these people who are bullying you, and what good is that going to do you? It ain't going to do nothing but worry you. They got what they wanted. So when I'm done with somebody, I don't focus my energy on them. I don't talk about them. I don't deal with it unless it's for educational piece. And my grandmother was that way. She didn't want me to dwell on these kids that were picking on me or my cousins that were picking on me because of how I talked or how I dealt with things. She just basically told me, like, forgive them for you and then keep it moving. That's just it. So I'm that way to this day. And you sit here and you mad at me? Cool, you mad. You sit here and you want to talk mess about me? Cool. But guess what? What you eat don't make me shit, and I'm going to keep it moving. I'm going to forgive you for not knowing any better and keep it moving. And honestly, that's how I honor her. I'm going to be unapologetic. I'm going to love my cousins. I'm going to be there for them if they ever need me. But the moment you cross the line, I will go ahead and burn that bridge and shut that door. Never even rebuild the bridge because it ain't worth it. I ain't even going to even look back at the bridge. I ain't going to look back and be like, damn, me and so-and-so used to be cool. No, that's done. I leave that in the past and keep it moving because that's how my grandmother raised me. But I always will love people and be uncompassionate. I will be very compassionate, not uncompassionate. And then my friends who hype me up, that support me, who's been here for me, my entire podcast career, my entire poetry career, my entire existence of being in their lives and them being in mine. I appreciate every single one of y'all. And especially y'all who told me, like, hey, I am proud of you for taking a stance on your mental health. And they've witnessed the things that I've gone through and seen the things that I've gone through. And they're proud and happy of me. And I appreciate every single one of y'all for being there for me. And, you know, support. I get it. I love it. It's great. It's cool. I appreciate every single one of y'all. But back to Jasmine. She's a strong, independent woman. Love it. Love her growth. Everything about it. Another person that I want to go ahead and say, my cousin, my A1 since day one. I love her to death. She's one of the most caring, compassionate people I know. I have multiple cousins, guys, but my A1 since day one know who she is. She is never really cried too often. She's been like the most gangster and thuggish person I've ever met. She's very passionate. And I appreciate her. She's always been, even when we were younger, she used to pick on me. But then at the same time, that's the one I used to always be under, because at the end of the day, she would sit here and defend me. She'd be like, no, 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 no. Look here, kids. I can pick on my cousin. Y'all can't pick on her. I will whoop y'all ass. Y'all are not going to disrespect my cousin in my face. She's always had my corner. She's always had my back. And even when I decided to model, she's sitting here talking about, Tink, you grown. Because that's my nickname. She's like, Tink, you grown. She's one of the few people who get away with calling me that, other than my brother. But she's like, nah, man, Tink, you grown. Do you, babe. Boo. And look at you. All right, I see you. I see you, cuz. Be hyping me up. Talking about, okay, boo, hard eyes. If anybody else doesn't give me no damn hard eyes, I know my cousin gonna give me some damn hard eyes. That's just it. Point blank, period. That's boo. That's A1 since day one. My sister don't give me no damn hard eyes. She don't love me like that. But I understand. She just glared at me. And we're not gonna talk about my damn cat. My cat's just always here. He's always support. But let me go ahead and tell y'all this. I have a poem I want to read. And this poem is just about mental health. And we're going to sit here and talk. I thought I had it pulled up. I don't have it pulled up. For those who didn't know, here's Nigo. He's making his normal guest appearance on the show. In the corner right here. Because that's just where he's at. So the poem I'm gonna read is called She's the Definition of Beauty. She is the definition of beauty. A smile that can carry you across the sea. Kindness that will fill you with joy, but you don't see the burden that she bears. Behind her beautiful eyes and beautiful brown skin that has nothing that you can even compare. It holds secrets that only a few can share. She walks through life day by day, fighting her demons and keeping them at bay. The beautiful ones always have the worst demons, the worst secrets. Anxiety, fear, depression, feeding on them. Will anyone save her from herself? From the hell created from within herself, from her history, her past. Not everybody has the wealth to get rid of it. She breathes and she keeps on living, because that's what society ends up telling she needs to do. Dating the wrong type of men, or start taking drugs, slowly dying from the inside. And she doesn't scream, she doesn't shout, hiding the pain because she becomes numb, drowning it away in bottle after bottle. But every single day you see a smile on her face, because that's what society tells her to do, to be strong, to be that proud black woman. She holds these demons and thoughts within, drowning them out with the drugs and sin as she keeps going on and lying on with different men because she doesn't love herself. To one day, she wants it all to end, to stop the voices, to stop being under the pressure from society. And then it begins, taking more and more of her than she could end up bearing. She just wants to sleep. No sound, just sleep. She's getting tired of being that strong black friend. She's getting tired of being that strong black woman. She just wants to close her eyes and actually be at peace. A blissful sleep. She wants to feel like she is floating across the sea. She just wants to be free. But society basically has a hold on her. And when you hear this girl's story, it's not just me. She could be you. Being told what she is meant to do. Hiding herself based off of what society is telling her to what she needs to do. You're black. You're strong. So you aren't allowed to show fear, to be weak. Black women are supposed to be the one that the world is put on the back of. We're supposed to support black men, but black men don't support us. We're supposed to end up bearing children and not have to fuss. We're not supposed to be broken down and have tears. We're not supposed to have fears. When every single day that the world is pressing up against us, but where are you guys when we need a ear? I end up telling people all the time that poetry can come in different forms. It doesn't need to rhyme. It just needs to end up making sense. It has to correlate together. It needs to end up being together. It needs to end up making sure that it's flow within each other. As a black woman who is trying to make a difference, and a millennial trying to make a difference, I want everybody to understand that there's a lot of resources out there. Don't look at us as, oh my God, she's being emotional, so she must be weak. No, for me being emotional, that means I am tired. It means I don't want to be strong anymore. I want to be vulnerable. I want you to understand where I'm coming from, that I do feel pain, that I can be tired, that I can suffer depression, I can have anxiety. We're human. We're all human. We all bleed. But these women that I've talked about today, not just the people who are personal to me, they make a difference. They do. I'll leave with this. I have one more poem. And it's called Alter Ego. My nerds will understand. And honestly, this is me. This is a poem about me. And I wrote this poem about, what is it, 2021? I wrote this poem probably about 2016, 2015. But it's called Alter Ego. So, here we go. Hi, I'm the alter ego. What you're seeing here, don't pay attention to the girl behind the mic. Because that's just a lie. I'm the real thing that you're going to get to see. I look like I'm carefree without the insecurities. I am the girl that she wished she could be. You know, the one that is behind the mic. So I'm going to portray who I meant to be. But here, let me go ahead and erase that thought and that mentality that you guys may not understand and may be thinking or may believe. But the girl that you actually see has a lot of insecurities. I have depression, anxiety, and pressure teens to get a hold of me. But I am, in your eyes, a strong, carefree individual with a smile that can break people's hearts and thighs and all the great parts. But let me go ahead and give you a little backstory on my history. This girl that's in front of you, this girl that you can see smiling, has a lot of misery, because at the end of the day, my PTSD makes me remember that I used to end up protecting the people who were meant to protect me. But I don't want you to see that character flaw, because society has made me who I'm supposed to be. And yes, that is a question, because society has basically pegged me as a black woman, so I'm supposed to suck up those fears and suck up those tears and keep on moving on with my life and just keep on pushing through all that fears. Because guess what? When I sit here and I tell people my story, you might think that it's a lie, but I have to end up coming to the realization that these things are not lies. These are where I have to compromise. That I can end up succumbing to what those things have became of me, or I could sit here and cry and weep and tears can feel within me and society may even pity me. So instead of being pitied because I sat here and protected my protectors and let people who were supposed to protect me cause me misery and sadness and pain and depression and PTSD and all these words that is foreign because of my skin color and my demographic, have you pitied me? I'd rather not be that version that you see. So when you see me out on the street, what you're going to get is me going, running into a booth, basically taking off my beautiful suit like Superman, jumping out and saying, I'm no longer Clark Kent. I am now Superman. So what you're going to end up getting is this woman that you see in front of the mic. And it's going to be me when I sit here and say, hi, I'm the alter ego. Because I don't want you to see my character flaws and see the pain that I went through and all the scars. Just remember, guys. My motto, stay hydrated. Educate yourself. It's okay to not be okay. Self-love is the best love. Self-care is the best care. And until next time, we will talk about more women out there who have made a tremendous feat in the world, in the medical field. Not just those who are minorities. We'll talk about a little bit more. I have a lot of women, all the way from white, Asian, black, and everything in between. There's a lot of women out there in the medical field that has done tremendous work, but I wanted to focus on black women because just like our other counterparts, they've gone through a lot. Just like I've gone through a lot. And for those who praise me for wanting to make a mark in society, I'm not the only one. Again, I've said this before, check out Strong Friends podcast. They are beautiful. She's a very beautiful, beautiful, beautiful hostess that will help you understand. So, till next time, guys, stay hydrated, stay blessed. Remember, you guys can follow me on social medias. You do #!socials. And make sure you guys follow the Twitch, follow the follow button. Keep the link up. Make sure you guys stay amazing. And just know that I love you guys. If nobody else told you today, you guys are amazing. You guys are great. You are special. You are valid. Your feelings are valid. And continue on with your strengths. I see you and I'm proud of you. This year might be hard already, but we are going to make it through it. Last year was bad, but we're going to keep making it through. We're going to keep pushing through it. Until next time, peace, love, and everything in between. And just remember, I'm still a poet, guys. I may be a poet. You guys may not know it.
But always smile and protect yourselves. Bye.